I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
I'm sure you guys must have started stepping out a bit and even shopping for clothes, especially now since the festive season is here. I know it's just the perfect excuse for indulgence. But can I tell you something? Fashion brands produce so many clothes every year that at least 30% of what's made globally never hits the shelf, and they end up in the landfill. More than 10 million tons of textiles are discarded every single year. Do they get recycled? Barely. Hi, I'm your host Pooja Singh, the National Features Editor of Mint, and welcome to the third season of The Millennial Mind. If there's one thing this pandemic has taught us, it is to be more conscious of our choices. Whether it is the food we are eating, the work we are doing, the things we are buying. You know what I mean. There's just so much more self-awareness now given the year this has been. Now imagine that if the fashion industry can make, say, purple the color of the season, or floral prints the big thing of summers, why can't it make it cool to be green and conscious? When we all know that the fashion industry is one of the most polluting industries, why can't it change itself? Why can't it offer us, the consumers, better options? In today's episode, I have a special guest who will answer all these questions. Eva Cruz is a globally recognized voice in sustainability. She's the CEO of Global Fashion Agenda, a leadership forum for industry collaboration on sustainability in fashion. And she's also the driving force behind the recently concluded Copenhagen Fashion Summit. I spoke to her over Zoom, so the voice quality isn't the best. And also, I'm still recording from home. So please, please bear with me. But I promise there's a lot to learn from our conversation. Hi, Eva. Thank you for taking out the time for us today. I know there were some technical difficulties and we lost a bit of time. So I'll ask my questions a little quickly. Eva, for the past 7 months, I've noticed a very different kind of change. People, mostly the youngsters that I speak with, they tell me that, you know, I actually see that they're becoming more and more vocal and, you know, more demanding about social, economic, and even environmental change. And I see industries, you know, slowly and steadily sort of responding to those changing demands. How is the fashion industry adapting to this?
And I think, of course, many were first of all forced to adapt by having to close their stores and pause a lot of orders and, you know, change the whole structure, maybe even of their collection systems for the rest of the year, at least. And I think a lot of companies have also, you know, appreciated is maybe a too strong or too positive a word, but they have taken it in with a sense of an opportunity also to rebuild or rethink how their company is structured. And I think that's maybe some of the more interesting conversations coming out of this. How do we not just rebuild everything as they were, but how do we actually create something better that will make us more resilient towards future crises and towards dealing with, this won't be the first, it's the first maybe, but it won't be the last of these types of either pandemics or other global crises due to whatever climate crisis or other things that we're facing in the future. And I think one of the things that has become imperative is that those companies who have the closest relationship with their suppliers and the least fragmented supply chain and the more transparency they have in their supply chain in general are the ones that have been coming strongest out of the crisis as well. And they were the most agile when it came to sort of having a dialogue with their manufacturers about what can we do with the dead stock both with the fabrics that we haven't used, but also with the produced, already produced garments that we cannot sell, remaking, getting them into circular loops and other things. And so I think that there are some new opportunities where the fashion industry will maybe also adapt to a world where we will maybe have a little bit more cautious focus on producing less overproduction.
You know, just before our conversation, I was doing a little bit of research and I came across this very worrying stat. It said that 30% of what's produced globally doesn't even make it to the market and it ends up in the landfill. And I can only imagine that because of this pandemic, since people have stopped shopping and the, you know, all the shops are closed, I mean, there must be like mountains of garment lying just, you know, unused. How can the industry solve this overproduction problem?
Well, I think it's an issue we've seen across the industry, from luxury brands to the more high street price points. So this is not just for specific price points. Overstock okay. or dead stock is the biggest okay. issue of the industry. I think generally, I mean, overstock has always been an issue, and or dead stock and huge inventories. And I think now more than ever, because of course of the shop closures, people sit on a lot of extra. We've done a couple of surveys on this and also discussed what could be taken into place. And I think definitely there are numerous ways that this, that these produced garments can become of use. So of course some can be pushed to a different season. I mean, even though a brand had decided that these flower summer dresses were to come out this summer, they can just decide to push them till next year. So if the consumer hasn't seen them, they're just as good new next year. So that's one thing that a lot of companies, of course, have made use of. Another thing is that looking at whether they can be remade. Can they be turned into something else? So this is a dialogue also that we're engaging with on the manufacturing side. So does this mean maybe even reskilling garment workers to becoming better at remaking and redesigning and re-sewing clothes that are already made rather than just creating new out of fabric? And then, of course, there's the opportunity to mark them down or to put them into different to reselling platforms or in other ways, you know, getting the clothes out and living. I think the latter is the least attractive one. And I think we've had we've had a long time building up an expectation from consumers on markdowns on fashion. And it's a system we as an industry ourselves has created by delivering, let's say, fall goods in April, and then that means that the fall and spring goods were already out of season or like outdated in the middle of the season where they should have been at their highest, which meant that we've had mid-season sales and the big online chains have been pressuring the prices down on products. So we as consumers have gotten used to getting discounts constantly, which also means that today we buy about 60% more than we did 15 years ago, and we have half the time. And people don't value fashion in the same sense because we don't pay as much for it. So I think to get back to a place where we don't mark down products and where we pressure a little bit more what we buy and where we keep it longer is where we need to go, because fashion has become very wasteful. It's something that it's all of a sudden become this commodity that we just take and use for a short time and then dispose as if it was trash.
That's a very good point you made, Eva. Now that I think about it, fashion really has become, you know, sort of a commodity that we just take, you know, use for a few days and dispose it off as if it's trash. When in fact, that one single piece of garment has been made with efforts of so many people, from the designers, the tailors, the weavers. Eva, there's been a lot of talk about sustainable fashion and what it means. And there are also many definitions for it. What exactly is sustainable fashion?
Yeah, it's a good question because it's many things, right? And the term is very broad. So you can talk about, of course, environmental sustainability. That has to do with the fabrics and how they're made and the chemicals and the dyes and the recyclability of the fabrics and so on. And then, of course, there's the social environment, the social sustainability, which is about labor rights and working conditions and and how we're treated, how we're treating staff throughout the whole value chain, even shop floors and so on. And then, of course, there's the ethical side, which also is encompassing somewhat the social, but it could be also on animal welfare or, you know, other things that comes into place. And then, of course, I mean, I think nowadays, if you are speaking about sustainability in a more consumer space as well, vintage has become a thing, like product that are pre-owned or pre-loved by somebody is also, even though that product might not in itself be categorized as sustainable, then just the fact that it's not a new product, and but that it's been, that it's going into a circle of being reused and re-loved and resold by someone. And I think that's a big part of also what we see coming out of fashion right now as a new business opportunity. So right in the beginning, of course, thrift shops and vintage stores and so on were like small independent, but now we also see the bigger commercial brands also moving into that space.
Thanks for that very well-rounded definition and setting the record straight. Often when I talk to, when I do stories and I talk to designers, many of them say that, you know, being sustainable is way too expensive. Eva, is going sustainable really that costly?
Well, it's true. When you look at fabrics, some fabrics are still more expensive to access sustainably. And it also has to do with the sheer volume of them is smaller. Which is also why, for instance, H&M say if they were to replace all of their cotton with organic cotton in their collections, they would absorb all the organic cotton that the world has to offer. So there wouldn't be anything left for anybody else. So it's just to say that the volumes of sustainable materials are still smaller than the traditional. And sometimes that also makes them more expensive. So, I think it's just a matter of how fast we move forward. So the bigger the ask, the bigger the volumes will become, and then the prices will also be smaller.
Eva, tell me something very, very honestly, and I don't know how to put it the right way, but I'm still going to ask this question. Do you really think the industry can, you know, make the change?
Yeah. But I'm also an optimist by heart. I am positive we can make it. The thing is that there's so many solutions and so much innovation and so many things at hand. And I do appreciate that also small designers think that it's very expensive and it's very complicated. And yes, it is. And you gotta want to really do it full on and heartfelt to find the energy to dive into this. But it's so rewarding, and everybody knows that. It's also rewarding not only for your consumers and customers, but also for the people working inside your brand, that you know you're not just there torturing the planet and people, but contributing to a triple bottom line of people, planet, and profit. However, I will say this one thing when you ask, can we do it? And sorry for the noise in the back, that's my 3-year-old watching the iPad. If you ask, can we really do it? Is it possible? I will have to say that even if we implement all of the technologies that we have today, all of the knowledge, all of the innovations, it will not bring us to the finish line if we don't address the growth issue. The sheer volume that our industry and the trajectory that, even though we are pausing on volume growth right now because of COVID, the trajectory we were on was going to make the industry grow 81% towards 2030. Those are the numbers from 2019. 81% towards 2030 in volume. And we're already, at the time we're at now, exceeding the planet's boundaries when it comes to resources, natural resources, water, land, the ability to absorb CO2 and chemicals and pesticides and whatnot. So of course we have to also discuss that. And that's why I'm saying circularity, rethinking our business model, how can we sell things at a better price but less volume? How can we shop smarter? How can we think circular and vintage and all these different ways of setting up successful, prosperous businesses that benefits many hands along the value chain, and obviously also the designers and founders and so on, but that really does it in balance with people and planet.
Can I confess something? I love shopping. In fact, I never used to repeat my clothes like for months. If I wore a shirt in the first week of May, then I will not wear it again till say July. I've changed a lot this year. I've barely bought anything, and now when I scroll through those fashion brand apps and if I like something, I ask myself, do I really need it? That's the thing, you know. This year has given us an opportunity to really rethink our choices. It's on us now what kind of future we want to build.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.